Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. Find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we're all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm pretty good. I just now launched the chat room, so my apologies to our chatters. I hate it when I do that. I generally try to launch the chat room like 5-10 minutes before the show starts. I just got it launched. So anybody's listening loves to chat, join us in the
Come
chat
room. Come on in. The water's fine.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll try to bring your texted comments into the show best we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll be in a better position to do that this evening than most nights because a portion of our program is pre-recorded this evening. Our interview with our special guest David Asprey actually occurred a little bit earlier this afternoon, so we'll be cutting to that here in just a few moments, and that will give us an opportunity not only, Stephen, for you and I to kind of sit back and listen to the interview, but also to participate in the chat room more than we normally do. That'll be nice, huh?
Absolutely. That'd be great. Well, how are things going around your house? It's been a while since we've had an update of the Phil homestead, So.
Well, great you should ask because I've got the property has definitely been improved. My baby daughter Sephra turned 2 last Sunday, and leading up to that, I got to put in a sandbox and a swing set, and sandbox was no big deal. Because it's a preformed plastic thing, and it was just a matter of going to Home Depot and buying 200 pounds of sand, four 50-pound bags of sand. There, I managed to get through that, and get it in there, and then boom, sandbox. But the swing set, this was complicated. I've got the video that I took of just all the parts out in the backyard, and then later the same day, the actual assembled swing set. And I got to say, I feel pretty good about that accomplishment, actually getting that thing up. But it was a full day of manual labor. I mean, real hard work doing this, right? I started at 9 in the morning and finished it up about 4:30 in the afternoon out in the sun. It was a nice warm day. So it's satisfying doing something like that. But also just, I know you've done things like this, Stephen, also just a huge hassle, right? Because you think it's going to take an hour, and then it takes 3, and then it's 6, and then you go, well, there's the entire day, and I'm sunburned, but here it is, right?
Finally got the thing. I have done things like that. It's basically, we have in our yard a swing set / fort, with kind of a climbing wall, and basically I bought this thing at Lowe's, about 7 or 8 years ago. And, the deal was, I forget exactly what they charged me, but it wasn't terribly bad. It was $300 or something like that. And plus another couple hundred and we'll assemble it for you. I'm like, I'll assemble it,
Yeah.
I was cursing myself for not taking them up on that deal. It took both Saturday and Sunday, but the weekend was shot, but great feeling of accomplishment when you get something like that done. So
well, for me, the frustration is if there's anything the least bit ambiguous in the instructions, and if there's any way to, like, initially put something up wrong, like backwards or just not right, that has to then be, you know, taken back apart and redone, I will find a way to do that, you know. And it's like the third or fourth time you do something like that, it's just like, ah, it's so frustrating. So I was really, like, just exhausted and just had it with the swing, so I didn't want to look at it when I got done. And about that time, Sephora gets up from her nap, and she comes out on the, we got a, like, a little deck, a little balcony out of our bedroom, and she looks out, and she says, Daddy made a park.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah,
you know, that makes it worthwhile, didn't it?
The whole thing was at that moment completely worth it. It would have been worth, you know, 10 days like that, clearly.
Well, absolutely.
So that was good fun. How about in your world? Any big stuff going on?
No, I tell you, it's the grind. There are times when, I don't know how, you know, in your career, Phil, I'm sure there are times where, I mean, you're absolutely there. You can't look, you know, you don't look up. You're just nose to the grindstone, and then other times a little bit slower. You know, we all have times like that. I would guess that right now in my life is one of the busier times. So, anyway, right, so I guess not too much to report and everything.
You're staying busy at work, you know, that's a commendable thing, actually.
Not too bad.
In my day job, one of the things I report on is people trying to get work, you know, so we're always grateful that we have
grateful to have it, absolutely.
Yeah. Ourselves. Yeah.
You won't hear me complaining about my job. I just note that I am staying busy, and that's just fine. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I am looking to find where you uploaded this our thing for just a little bit later. Sorry to interrupt the program with a little programming.
Well, it should have our guest's name, David Asprey.
Okay.
That should be the name of it. So, and I believe those are listed alphabetically. So if you look for
it goes from Corey Doctorow to Dr. James Hughes, and then to Fast Forward Archives. Sorry, there's nothing under D.
Well,
so, my apologies.
Anyway, while
you're doing that, I thought I should visit with the audience a little bit about the solar singularity. I was reading an article the other day. I thought this was pretty fascinating. The solar singularity, according to this article, and I'll put the link in the show notes here in just a second. The solar singularity is projected to cross that boundary in 2015. We're talking 4 years. And what are we talking about? We're talking getting power from solar panels cheaper than we can from a coal-burning power plant in a mere 4 years. So that's pretty awesome. This is from the guy.
5 years ahead of what Kurzweil predicts, right?
Exactly. And one of the reasons that it's ahead is it's a little bit different from standard solar panels is what's going to lead to this. It appears that a cheaper alternative to solar panels that's not nearly as efficient as standard solar panels, but is, you know, so much cheaper than solar panels, means that we're actually going to get to a solar singularity faster, even though we're not as efficient, because we are, you know, if something is half as efficient but 10 times cheaper, you are still ahead, right? So,
absolutely, yeah.
That's kind of what we're looking at here. And so I'll put that in the
just the kind of unexpected math. You expect, you know, you expect everything to go in a line where it becomes cheaper and more efficient at the same time. It's like, no, well, you know, it's like, here, how about a lot cheaper but less efficient, right? That's the unexpected, you don't see that one coming exactly, but there it is. Okay, I actually see the file. I've logged in as you. Should I go ahead and initiate it then?
Well, I suppose you could. All right, let's just kick back and hear it get started here.
Okay, well, folks, here is the promised topic of our show, which is our interview with David Asprey. We'll be coming back on afterwards to reflect on what we've heard. But here is my interview with David Asprey from earlier today. Our guest this evening is a New York Times published Silicon Valley biohacker, entrepreneur, senior executive, and angel investor who spent 15 years and $250,000 hacking his own biology to gain an unfair advantage in business and life. He upgraded his brain by more than 12 IQ points, lost 100 pounds, got ripped without exercise, learned to sleep less than 5 hours per night, and became an expert in mental performance, setting his career on fire. He's the author of an upcoming book entitled The Better Baby Book, about how to have higher IQ, healthier babies by modifying nutrition, stress, and toxins during pregnancy. He's the president and chairman of the Smart Life Forum, which is an 18-year-old anti-aging nonprofit education group that's featured more than 100 of the top researchers in health and nutrition in its monthly meetings. He blogs about how to be a higher performance human and entrepreneur on bulletproofexecutive.com. Dave Asprey, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Thanks very much, Phil.
Well, we're really pleased to have you. I have to say I've been watching the Vimeo video of your talk at the Bill conference that Alexis Bright shared with me a couple of weeks ago, and I've sat through it a couple, three times now, and just very exciting things that that you've done in your own life and that you're sharing with other people. There's a lot of stuff I want to get into, but if we can just kind of randomly jump in, my first question is, can I really be thinner eating a pound of butter, or was it a stick of butter and a pound of red meat every day?
Absolutely, you can do this. And I'm speaking from the standpoint of someone who used to weigh 300 pounds. I was fat till I was in my mid-20s, and I started actively biohacking and quantifying what worked and what didn't work. And I just through the process of trial and error and self-experimentation, as well as getting to know some of the top experts in the world on how the body actually works, came up with this. It's pretty related to the paleo diet, which has recently been trending, although I've been on this program for a good more than 10 years. It turns out that when you eat more fat or more what I would term high-octane foods, your liver has the ability to burn toxins better, and your body learns that it burns fat for fuel instead of burning carbs, or even worse, burning muscle, which is the state most people are in most of the time. For the past 5 years, literally, a stick of butter a day. I measured it the other morning just to make sure. My breakfast had 200 grams of mixed coconut oil and grass-fed butter in it, along with a couple eggs. And I measure these results. It turns out yesterday I went to see my favorite anti-aging doctor, Dr. Philip Lee Miller at antiaging.com. He has offices in Los Gatos. I've been seeing him for 7 or 8 years. Once a year, I get about a dozen vials of blood drawn and a huge complex spreadsheet full of all my parameters. And he said, Dave, your LDL cholesterol, the one you want to be high because it's protective, he said it's 81. It's higher than is supposed to be possible for a male in your age. These results are amazing. They're great. So that's been happening for years and years. My wife, a Karolinska-trained physician from Sweden, same thing. She is on the same diet, eats a little bit less butter than I do because she weighs less than I do. But both of us have found it effortless to remain thin to the point that, to make an extreme example, for the last 18 months, funny enough, my son is about 18 months old, I have slept 5 hours or less per night, measured, and oftentimes only 2 hours per night. Sleeping less than 8 hours is correlated very heavily with obesity. Being obese in the past is correlated with obesity. And I'm eating about 5,000 calories, very carefully chosen healthy calories a day. Every book written that uses things like calories, as calories in, calories out, says that I should be either dead or 500 pounds, literally 500 pounds if you do the math. And what happened instead is my blood numbers came in yesterday, lowest cortisol of the last 7 years. So in a time of really intense working on a book, starting a new job, working on funding two companies through venture capitalists, all of that, I managed to lower my stress levels, sleep less, improve my brain function, and without exercising at all, we're talking three yoga classes in 18 months, not three per week, three yoga classes, and one kettlebell session just to see what Tim Ferriss was talking about. I walk around, I have a six-pack. I have defined muscles, and people think I work out 8 hours a week. I don't waste time on that.
Wow. Okay, so a couple questions about this now.
because always a person has to look for the catch here. And I note, for example, you said grass-fed butter. And I noted in your video you talked about grass-fed meat. Is that that's a big part of it, right? That you're getting these foods from the correct source, or how big of a difference does that actually make?
It's night and day. When I first started exploring ways to keep myself thin, back when I worked out 6 days a week for an hour and a half a day and still weighed 300 pounds, I tried eating more meat. You know, the typical Atkins story: more meat, more cheese. And yes, you can lose weight on that, but you start to not feel so good after a while. And it has to do with some biochemistry, some of which isn't well understood or isn't common knowledge, and some of which is actually used by what I would call the vegan agenda, selectively using the word agenda there, to tell people that meat's unhealthy. And it turns out meat is not meat every time. Some cows are fed corn, antibiotics, and soy for the vast majority of what they eat. They are full of omega-6 oils. Omega-6 oils break down into inflammatory substances in the body. You try and build cell walls and hormones out of them, and it basically gums up the works. If you eat a pound of that kind of red meat, which contains the wrong oils and high levels of mold toxins that come from using poor quality food with the animals, you are actually going to get very high VLDL, the riskier parts of cholesterol, and you'll get joint pain and you won't feel good. Same goes for butter. Butter from healthy cows that ate grass or mostly grass will be far healthier. It will help you lose weight and will positively influence your blood chemistry. Butter from corn and soy-fed cows will do the opposite. So I'm choosy about my butter, and I eat the best steak I can possibly buy, which is grass-fed steak with the most fat I can find on it, because it's the fat that helps you burn other fat and makes you feel good, builds your hormones, it builds your brain.
That sounds awesome. I mean, that's I'm getting hungry thinking about this, I wouldn't call it diet that you're on, this different approach to nutrition that you've developed. Or you didn't come up with it yourself. As a hacker, you've construed this from research that others did. How much of what you're doing right now would you say is original to you, and how much of it is based on the research of others?
It's about 90% original to me. Backward engineered towards, I'm closest to the paleo diet, the program we'll call it the bulletproof diet for brevity in our conversation. But I reverse engineered this. I said, what are all the variables I can think of in diet, and how do I test each one of them myself? And then what's the research that backs this up? What are the likely things to try? And I found out that the more fat I ate, the better I performed, the less sleep I needed, the better my blood chemistry got, as long as I ate the right types of fat. So the simplistic view that fat is fat, protein is protein, and carbs are carbs, it's broken on all three levels. There's starch, there's sugar, there's fiber, they're all carbs. Protein, you have black widow spider venom is a protein, but I'm not eating it.
Right.
Soy protein is maybe worse for you than black widow spider venom, at least
that
over the long haul.
Is a protein, I believe, right?
There you go, right. Prions. So there's all sorts of things. So saying protein is, it's conveniently simple, but it leads people to make decisions like substituting tofu for egg yolks. Sorry, pick the egg yolk every time, you'll win, even if it's not an organic egg yolk. You'll feel better, your body will thank you. And you get this whole process where after a while, my book, for instance, 1,300 references that we wrote down, and I've read probably 10,000 more papers and research articles and books, and spoken maybe 1,000 hours with some of the top researchers in nutrition and medicine, and anti-aging medicine particularly, over the last many years. And what I came up with is an amalgamation of a lot of that and a bunch of self-experimenting.
Well, it's really an amazing story. And for anyone who's listening who hasn't clicked the link and watched the video yet, Dave actually provides pictorial evidence of the change that occurred over his life, and it really is quite remarkable to see. And to think that you're in the state you're in now, which is a very thin, very healthy-looking individual eating 5,000 calories a day, which number is just, you know, for some people, I think that's going to just be shocking. I guess for most people, that's probably shocking.
I read the book. I noted in the video that you talked about, Tom, and he's got the book, Why We Get Fat. Read that a while back, and I was following some of the discussion on that on Amazon, and I've blogged about it. And it seems whenever a discussion gets going about that, there's always a few people who are just going to say, no, it's how much you put in. If people would eat less, they would weigh less. And, you know, you can say all this other stuff you want to about carbs and fats and all these other things, but if people would eat less, fewer calories than they would, or burn more calories than they would, not be fat. But you seem to be a walking proof that that's ridiculous. And
part of the reason I'm really passionate about that point is that when I weighed 300 pounds, it wasn't because I was a fat lady slob. I was fat, and actually I was lazy, but I wasn't a slob. And
there,
lazy
important distinction. Yes.
Exactly. Lazy is important because it is possible to work out for, you know, 30 or 40 hours a week and eat like a bird and probably, you know, stay kind of lean. It takes a lot of work and a lot of willpower, and it's unpleasant, but it can be done. Because I believed that that's what the recipe for being thin was. When I weighed 300 pounds, I worked out 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 45 minutes of cardio with intervals and 45 minutes of heavy weights, and I ate 1,500 low-fat calories a day. I was starving. I actually broke my thyroid and had, like, brain function decline as a result of that sort of mistreatment of my body. I was also constantly inflamed because I didn't have enough of the fats that don't oxidize in the body. These are the fats like butter and coconut oil and animal fats. So given my experience, which says calories in and calories out doesn't work, it's a hormonal regulatory thing that's far more important than the calories. When Gary Taubes, you know, Why We Get Fat and Good Calories, Bad Calories, when he published his book, I wanted to give the guy a hug. In fact, he did come and speak at Smart Life Forum, and we're going to be putting that video up on smartlifeforum.org in the next couple of weeks. But I was amazed because he spent 5 years pulling together the thousands of pieces of evidence that support the hypothesis that calories in and calories out doesn't work, it can't work, and it never has. Another guy to pay attention to is Tim Ferriss, a fellow biohacker, an author of The 4-Hour Body. He and I followed very similar paths. We're both Silicon Valley guys, both actually have worked with some of the same venture capital type of people, and actually both started companies that do brain vitamin type of things. So Tim, in his book, talks about the effect of temperature, and something I've also been talking about at Smart Life Forum. Everyone who says, I have a spreadsheet that says, here's what I ate and here's what I burned, they never account for the fact that their body temperature changes during the day and the temperature of the room they're in changes during the day, which is a huge burner of calories.
Right.
So the measurement is broken, the equations are broken, the physiology doesn't work, and it comes from thinking we're like robots or car engines, and we're not. We're far more delicately tuned, self-repairing organisms that deal with signaling pathways far more effectively than brute force, you know, 19th century in-and-out equations.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the big lesson that you get from reading Taubes' book, and it seems that you're helping to demonstrate that just in a very dramatic way, I would say, through the example that you're setting. Now, let's talk a little bit more about some of the other aspects of biohacking, because there's a lot more to this than just diet. And I'm looking at my notes that I took the last time I watched the video, and I think I must have written this down wrong, because you introduced a principle around how you approach health and life and everything, and I must have written this down wrong, because what I've got written down here is ignore what doesn't work and try what doesn't work. That isn't right, is it?
Not quite right. What I'm sort of an algorithm there that says, well, how do you go about biohacking itself? And you do what should work. And in the case of calories, it's, well, what should work is what any magazine will tell you and any nutritionist who hasn't actually studied biochemistry. And the answer is eat less and work out more. Well, that should work. When you try it and you try it for enough time to find out that it just plain doesn't work, you should ignore it and then try what ought not to work. So if someone presents you with a fact, you test the fact and it's false, then you test the opposite. consider that fact. And that's what I've done with my biohacking entirely. I apply systems thinking. My background's artificial intelligence and decision support systems sorts of things. And I ran the internet engineering program for the University of California at Santa Cruz for 5 years. And I've been a successful tech entrepreneur kind of guy. So fixing and troubleshooting large systems with hundreds of thousands of moving parts where you change one thing and something across the data center changes is a very similar model to what happens within your body. So you apply techniques like careful correlation over time. We say, I made this change, and what happened, not just in a half hour, but the next day, in 2 days, in 4 days. And one of the things I discovered in the process of figuring out what made my brain less, what made me more tired and more foggy, that if I ate wheat 4 days later, I was pretty much a zombie. Not the next day, not the next hour. Those are the things that elude most people. Fortunately, there are lists of the most common allergens, and it's very easy to test these things. But most people never think to graph and say what happens to me 4 days, 3 days, 5 days, even a week after I do something. In my case, I used an awesome biohacking technique, one that's much easier to do now. In 1997, I used FreeCell, which is a form of solitaire you can find on most mobile phones. So FreeCell has this neat theory that every single game has a solution. And if you play it very often, you can tell that it takes you about X number of minutes to do a game. And if you do three games, to account for the fact some are a little harder than others, you can tell whether it's a good day or a bad day. And you can,
right,
can actually graph your mental performance.
So your FreeCell performance is your indicator for just your overall mental acuity for that day. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. And I don't do that. I don't track it religiously every day. But there was a time in 1997 when I went to the doctor and I said, I'm getting so tired and my brain isn't working right and something's wrong. I don't know what it is. You know, I'm overweight. I can't lose weight. All sorts of things. I said, but I can feel that I'm grasping for words and I'm just not as sharp as I should be. And I needed a way to tell if I was just convincing myself that was the case or whether it really was the case. And I came up with this way, and it helped me to see what the external factors were that influenced my my ability to think.
So with gathering that kind of feedback, when you learn I'm slow this day, and you map that back to something you ate the previous day, it seems like there's corrective measures you can take along the way. But how do you take these? How do you get to these? Some of these next steps, where you're working with your sleep or your heart rate or some of these other markers.
Well, it's really interesting that everything in the body is tied to everything else. So there are oftentimes systems where you can push on one and the other ones change. And in the case of let's say this problem with feeling tired in the afternoons, just feeling kind of foggy, which is a huge problem. Almost everyone I know, when I tell them the sort of biohacking things I do, they say either, how do I lose weight or how do I have more energy, especially in the afternoons? Like it's a rampant problem.
Right.
And most of them say, oh, I try and get more sleep at night. And then you say, how does that work for you? And most of the time they say, I'm still tired in the afternoon. So this is one of those cases where you could look at nutrition or you could look at quality of sleep. In my case, I apply several different techniques to getting more efficient sleep in less time. One of my favorite devices is the Zeo. It's a Zeo. It's a sleep hacking machine, I'll call it. It's a little headband you wear at night, and it tells you how much REM versus deep versus light sleep you got, how often you woke up even. Ben, the CTO of Zeo, is actually starting to blog on bulletproofexecutive.com about some of the sleep hacking stuff as well, and just as well as other biohacking techniques. What we're doing, what I do with the Zeo is I say, well, what did I do that helped me to get more deep sleep more quickly? I've gotten to the point I can fall asleep in 2 minutes very reliably, even if I've had a cup of coffee, which I wouldn't have at night because it would take me out of my REM sleep. So I try and fill my nights with more REM and deep sleep than light sleep. And by doing that, I can get less sleep. And when I wake up, I follow basic biochemistry things that give me more mitochondrial energy. I eat the right foods, and I take smart drugs. And I am able to show, all of my biomarkers show that I'm doing fine after 18 months of this, frankly, crazy sleep schedule. Most people would say you're intentionally sleeping 5 hours a night. You're going to die. And the numbers actually show that I'm getting healthier, not dying.
Fascinating. So when you use this, the Zio device, is that right?
Yes, it's just called the Zio, and it's at myzio.com for people who are trying to find a reference to it.
Okay. So you get this feedback, and it says, you know, tonight was a good night. You got this much REM sleep. You got this much whatever the sleep. I don't even know the lingo around sleep to talk about this. But so you get a night that was good, then you get one that maybe wasn't so hot, and then you get one that was pretty bad. How do you fix it, right? I mean, how do you correct your sleep so that you're always getting the good nights?
In the talk I've got about from the Build conference, I mentioned something called the exposome. And the exposome is much bigger than your genome, and it's a list of all of the environmental stuff that you're exposed to over the course of your lifetime. And the problem with the exposome is that it's very large, it's entirely expansive. But the cool thing is that we know most of the things that are influencers of sleep today. So you look at the most likely things first, and you eliminate those. If that doesn't work, you sort of go down a list if you're familiar with the biochemistry. If you're not, there's guys like me who write blogs on that stuff. I've just completed a relatively long series on sleep hacking, a series of blog posts where I talk about, okay, if staying asleep is the problem, here are the nutrients that can do it. But forget the nutrients. Have you tried not exposing yourself to bright light beforehand, because that turns off your melatonin production? Should you take melatonin? Should you not take melatonin? What I've figured out from working with people around the tech industry for a lot of years is that most people have a learned helplessness. They think, this is what happens to me, but the line between cause and effect is very blurry, and they don't feel empowered to step up and say, I'm going to change that.
Right.
The turning point for me, there were two of them. One was when I went into a physician at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation. I won't give you his name, but I said, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I'm really not doing well, and vitamin C makes me feel better. And he said, how much do you take? I said, I take 3 grams. It's 3 pills a day. And he looked at me and said, stop. It could kill you. And I turned and I said, well, what about Linus Pauling? And Linus Pauling happens to be the guy who was nominated for the Nobel Medical Prize twice and took 90 grams of vitamin C and is sort of known as the father of vitamin C type of things. The physician looked at me and said, who's Linus Pauling?
And oh, wow.
I looked at him and I said, you're fired. And it occurred to me then that I could do more and I could probably know more than that guy about my case, not about all of medicine. I'm married to a doctor. She knows amazing things that I don't know and I'm not going to know. But around the things that bother me most, I have Google, and it's been a very good friend to me. When it comes to things like sleep, use Google and say, if I have a hard time falling asleep, what do I do? And you'll find, if you search for sleep hacking, you'll find my info and you'll find other info and you'll find communities of people who will tell you, try this stuff. And most of it, your doctor won't tell you because they don't have time or they're not allowed to tell you.
So let's talk a little more about the exposome. This was a new term for me, and I was pleased to see that it was a new term for most of the folks at Bill. So I didn't feel like I was too out of the loop then to be learning this word. This is going to reverse engineer the word as expo. It's the genome, but it's not the genome. It's like your environmental gnome. It's your what you're exposed to stuff. Right. Is that the idea?
Right. That's exactly what it is.
So. Why is this idea so important, and why hasn't anyone thought of this before? I guess would be my two questions about the exposome.
It's important because we have the genome, and this came out of research I did because hacking myself and getting myself to a very high-performance, very healthy state without spending a lot of time on it became a big goal. But when it came time to have children, my wife and I are later in life. We had both of our kids after 40. And I put together a biohacking program to say, how do you ramp up as much health as possible before and during pregnancy? And what are the effects of that? And the research shows that it has multi-generational effects.
So by using the exposome to change my wife's genetic expression during pregnancy, our kids inherited healthier genes than they otherwise would, and they will hand them off to their children as well, actually for several generations. This is called epigenetics. It's a known effect. And we have all these people going out there, people I really like, I know and like Aubrey de Grey, who gave a talk at Smart Life Forum. Aubrey de Grey is a leading anti-aging biogerontologist out of Cambridge University.
He has been on Fast Forward Radio a couple of times.
Oh, great. He's been on a couple of times. So, a fascinating guy. But he talks about genetically engineering the human body with genes from bacteria that eat dead people so they can help to clean up the body.
Right.
A laudable goal, but in order to affect genes, you don't need to engineer them. What you do is you affect whether RNA can access DNA to copy it. And the notion, the core learning from the epigenetics revolution is that your exposome is far more configurable than your genome. And by changing your exposome, you change what your genome does. You can change, even just through the act of meditation or through deep breathing, it's documented you can change more than 500 genes over the course of a month. In fact, some parts of this regulatory protein sheath for your genes change on a second-by-second basis in response to the environment around you. And that's why tweaking your exposome or making changes there have immediate, much more noticeable and much more reproducible effects on the body than long-term genetic engineering projects. And that's why we chose to go down this path in writing our book, first for parents about how to, you know, we don't call this in the book, but how to hack their pregnancy. How do you do the things that don't take a lot of work, don't take a lot of time, that give you smarter babies forever? Like, that's the most impactful thing that I could think of. And that's why we wrote that book before writing the next book that will come out, which will be The Bulletproof Executive.
Right, okay. So, The other thought that occurs to me about the exosome is that it's the one we have access to, right? I mean, I guess that's why it's more hackable, right? I can do things about what I'm exposed to, right? There's really nothing I on my own can't really do anything with my genes, right? Unless I mess them up somehow. But it seems like it's almost too obvious, maybe. That's why people didn't think of it before.
Exactly. It's also harder to map. So right now, how many trace toxins are you being exposed to right now? The answer is nobody knows and probably no one knows, but we can do reasonable mappings of, you know, people in what area are exposed to what things. And it's not just toxins. It's also the nutrients, things that are good for you, and things that are both good and bad, like sunlight. Well, if you have enough sunlight, you get enough vitamin D, and your circadian rhythm will probably work right. You get too much, you get sunburned, and you might get skin cancer. So its dose levels matter as much as anything else. What I set out to do, both for my kids and for my own health and well-being and my own performance as a business person, as a father, was to say, what are the things in the environment that I can tweak that give me more hours in the day, that give me more mental horsepower during the hours that I'm awake so I can do more and really be more? And how do I stay in control of all that so I can be calm and focused and centered when I need to be, and basically be kinder to my children and to my family and to people around me. And in order to do that, there were these three big things that pop out when you look at the exposome. One is getting good nutrients, which is why I eat the way I eat, which egg yolks, grass-fed meat, butter, coconut oil, and some vegetables when I get around to it, but the focus is on high-quality, clean animal protein. The second thing is toxins. There are a bunch of toxins that people are exposed to that they don't really recognize, and some of them are parts per million-based, and many of them come from poor-quality food. Most of that research was done by animal ranchers who make money by producing chickens or pigs or cows on a regular basis, ones who aren't sick. They track these toxins, but human food is actually not tracked as well as animal food for these toxins because, if your whole herd of cows can't reproduce, you have a big problem, so you track it. But if human fertility drops a little bit, it actually is very hard to pull the data out. So we looked at the biochemistry of a bunch of toxins, and here's how to avoid the most obvious ones. In fact, the vast majority of obvious ones you can avoid by making some lifestyle and environmental changes that are small.
The last one is stress. If you don't control your stress, it doesn't matter what you eat or how clean you live. If you're stressed all the time, your genes won't be very healthy. You won't be healthy. You won't be happy, and you won't be high performance. There is math around stress. Go ahead.
So what can people do about stress? You know, if you've got like a really stressful job or, you know, stressful, obviously if you have a stressful home environment, there are, you know, there are things you can at least try to do about that. But some people just seem to lead very high stress lives. Is there hope for people in those kinds of situations?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm one of those. I moved internationally in the last 18 months. I moved internationally, which is one of the more stressful things you can do. Had my second child, which is also one of the most stressful things you can do. I changed jobs four times, from working in venture capital to working with two different startups, to working with a large publicly traded company as a senior executive. I travel frequently. I'm on an airplane almost every week, between two and four times. I live the type A Silicon Valley stress life. And, of course, during all of this, I've also managed to author a book that Wiley's publishing, and I run a successful blog, and I actually like my family. I wasn't always this way. This is conscious behavior modification that comes through the use of technology. There's two big things for stress that you can do. The first one is something that I'll be a certified trainer in a little while. It's called the Heart Math Coherence Technique. This is a relatively inexpensive $200 to $400 device that measures your heart rate. And it looks not at how frequently your heart beats, but how evenly spaced the beats in your heart are. And it turns out that the spacing between your heartbeats needs to follow a sine wave pattern. That's too geeky for a lot of people, but what it means in practical reality is that you get the device, you put the little clip on your ear so it can see your heartbeat, and then you do whatever you have to do with your breathing and your mind to make the light turn green. It's simple biofeedback. And when you do that, it's like tuning the engine in your car. It makes sure that you're beating on all cylinders, and it makes sure that your heart and your breath and your pulse wave are all in alignment. When that happens, you feel actually almost a blissful state, very akin to advanced Zen meditation. But it's all based on math. It's just teaching you to have conscious control of your stress. And 80% of the nerves between your heart and brain go from your heart to your brain. So you focus on this feeling that makes the light turn green. You can't do it wrong, because if you do, the light won't turn green. And then magically your stress just goes away. You do it for 10 minutes a day. Before you go to sleep, you have a better night's sleep, and you're less stressed. It's profoundly simple and way easier than spending, you know, 4 hours a week on a psychotherapist couch, although some people need that too. And God knows I've, you know, spent my time learning how I was wired years ago, and that led me to be more aggressive in pursuing, you know, how do I deal with stress? How do I rewire my nervous system to respond differently? And that's what I've done.
Now, in the 10 minutes that you spend doing that, you can get your heartbeat into that sine wave configuration that you were talking about. But does that impact the pattern that you have throughout the entire day then, or is it just that 10 minutes is enough to provide those benefits?
The more you do it, the more often you do it, the easier it is for those benefits to stick. But you'll see shifts in like cortisol levels in relatively small amounts. So it depends on the individual person, but that's a minimum amount. A lot of people might do, I wake up in the morning, I do a few minutes of this just to get myself into that state of flow where I can actually feel my body is more relaxed and my brain is more relaxed and I'm ready to go face the day. And they might do it to sort of let the day's stress go away. It's related to meditation, except with meditation, you don't always know if you're doing it right. And you could be doing it wrong, and you could be wasting an enormous amount of time on meditation if you think you're doing it, but you're not actually doing it.
And you talked about how you achieve the brain state in 1 week that people normally get from decades of meditation. Now, is that related to your heart rate, or was that something else that you did?
They are related, but I didn't use the heart technique in order to do that. That was more of a brain hack than a sort of physiology hack. The advanced Zen state that I'm talking about comes from a Japanese form of Zen, and It takes the person who's achieved that state fastest took 21 years of daily practice, and some people take up to 40 years of doing an hour of meditation a day to reach this state of brainwaves, which
is measured by an MRI or something like that. Is that right?
It's measured by an EEG, by the electrical signals of your brain. And guys like the Dalai Lama is a huge fan of EEG neurofeedback. He's got actually cash prizes out for people who can help him reach some of the more advanced states that he uses more quickly using these techniques. So I spent a week in a kind of a mad scientist laboratory hooked up to an $11 million EEG machine each day for a relatively long period, listening to sounds. And whenever I didn't do a technique right, I wouldn't hear the sounds. And I'd get kind of, frankly, pissed off because, like, well, I'm here to raise my IQ and to get all these, you know, advanced Zen benefits, which isn't very Zen. And over the course of the week, you literally learn, okay, in order to make my score go up, in order to make the hemispheres of my brain synchronize and to do the things they need to do, I have to let go of those things. And it's just a new way of thinking. You do the same thing when you meditate for many years. You just don't know when you're doing it wrong, so it's like you take a very long meandering path. With computing, with the modern techniques we have, the ability to do data analytics in the cloud, all of this comes together and says we can look at what someone, the first guy who blazed the trail made a long meandering trail to whatever this new state is, but the next guy who does it, once the state's defined, we can basically carve a four-lane highway right to that state using a computer, and it's much easier to get there, and that's what I'm doing. I didn't discover advanced Zen meditative states. People did that tens of thousands of years ago, but what I did is I said, I know where he got, and I know how to get there using these computing techniques. I hooked myself up with sticker electrodes on my forehead and on my ears and worked with a EEG neurotechnician, basically, in order to reach those states.
Now, some will say that's cheating. I certainly wouldn't take that stand, but I'm sure you must get accused of that. But my actual question is not whether you feel like you were cheating, because I think that's silly. But does it stick, right? Is it as effective to do it in a week as it would be if you spent 20 or 30 years getting there?
Well, a famous statement, the point of the journey is not to arrive. So there is benefit to, for instance, all of the learning that you get when you take on any spiritual training, whether it's Buddhism or any religion, including all the Western Christianity-based ones. And I'm not saying that those aren't valuable at all. And in fact, being in these advanced states without any grounding in spirituality, it actually could be dangerous, I would say, for some people. For the average person, it's a profound improvement, but it'll probably spark their interest in learning more about the underpinnings of why and how this works and ways to frame the new way that they will see the world if they literally do 20 years of meditation in a week. It's kind of disruptive to your life, to be honest, but it is a very big, what I would call an upgrade.
Right.
In terms of whether it's cheating or not, yes, it's cheating. It's one of my biggest techniques. I love cheating. The idea that you're supposed to suffer to get something is built in, especially in the U.S. It goes back to the original pilgrims and long periods of starvation and whatever else. Suffer if you must, but to suffer because that's what you're supposed to do or because that's what the last guy did who did it, it's not only irrational, it's an insult to all the other life forms that you're sharing the planet with. If you come here and you just waste your life suffering and not getting anything done, frankly, you just wasted all that oxygen and you should have saved it for someone else who had better uses for it.
Absolutely. I love the approach of taking the benefits from, that's why people struggle, right? It's so that you can get to something so that later someone else has that benefit. I mean, it's kind of the old blazing the frontier. Somebody has to go and start the path, and then it's easier for the next person and a little easier for the next person. Now, on this particular one, I wonder, is there some middle thing between 21 years of Zen and 1 week and $20,000? Is there more of a, regular person approach to this that
yes.
that is hackable, but maybe not that extreme 1 week.
There ago. Are. The heart math technique that I talked about that I'm starting to I'm planning to do some coaching for people on is a pretty close approximation. Having been in the advanced Zen states and having felt what heart math coherence techniques will do, there's probably an 80% overlap just from a qualitative perspective. Like you sort of feel that way. I've seen some studies that say that the brainwave changes are similar. So that's a good place to start. You're talking $200 and, a half hour a day or 10 minutes a day. Very
right.
achievable. The next step up from there is an organization called Brain State Technologies. I went and visited with the founder there, Lee Gerdes. That runs in somewhere about $2,500 for 10 sessions. It's available in most major cities internationally as well as in the U.S., and there are various practitioners of it, and this is another brainwave EEG-based technique, and it takes 10 hours over the course of 1 week, and you sit in a darkened room, and you just listen to sounds that are made by your own brain, and it helps your brain rewire itself to be more effective. I haven't seen IQ studies like I have with the one that I did, but it's a very similar approach, and I've seen profound changes in people who've done it, including people who with brain damage. That they do this thing where literally there is no conscious trying like there is with some techniques. You sit there and your brain does the work itself, and you sort of sit there and listen to some relaxing sounds, and when you're done, your ability to play music goes up. Your brain is wired. Your stress levels plummet. You physically regenerate and start healing things that haven't been done. I brought my mother to see Lee Gerdes. My mother had brain surgery at Stanford years ago and has been unable to control the toes of one foot, which has led to her limping. She went in, and after 7 of these one-hour sessions, for the first time in 13 years, she consciously could control the muscles in her foot, literally. 13 years of trying, no results. Hooked up to an EEG machine, 7 hours of trying over the course of, that was 3 days. At 3 days in, the feeling came back and the ability to move those came back. Most people have parts of their body they can't access because their brain doesn't know how, and these technologies replace massive amounts of suffering and sweating and trying with, hey, here's what it feels like to be there. Here's how to get there, and then you're there. It's really cool, and it's not that expensive or inaccessible.
Well, it sounds like something that should be much more widely known about. I mean, it sounds like something that's just on the verge of becoming mainstream. The ability to improve what our brains are doing, improve what our hearts are doing, and just make our bodies work better through technology that's available to us. It just seems like a terrific idea. Now, you closed your talk. You had the six major things that you recommended, and I just want to zip through those real fast. I think we've covered most of them, but on the first one, counting down, you said strengthen your immune system. You recommended 1,000 IUs of vitamin D for every 25 pounds of your body weight. What's that about?
Well, I've spent many years working on my immune system because for 15 years I was on antibiotics every month for strep throat and sinus infections. Every time I'd fly, I'd be sick for 2 weeks. And it was affecting my quality of life and my performance at work. So I really, this was one of the first things I really worked on. And after years of working with this nonprofit and having talked to people all over the world who are experts in their field, the single most effective thing you can do for cancer, heart disease, colds, flu, everything, if you had one thing you could do, it's this vitamin D rule. The dosing recommendations come from Dr. Cannell at the Vitamin D Research Institute, who's also come to speak at Smart Life Forum. You'll find just about every physician who deals with anti-aging and chronic degeneration and disease is recommending levels of vitamin D that approach this level, and I picked this amount because this is what brings most white people to about a level of 90 on the typical test for vitamin D. If listeners are not white, like many of my friends, they actually need more, especially if they're doing aggressive sports where they may be at risk of breaking bones, or if they either have kids or are about to have kids, because there are lifelong changes that happen when you don't get enough vitamin D. So this is fundamental, and there's no excuse to not do this. It's the cheapest thing you can ever do. If you do it right, you won't get the flu anymore. That alone should be enough.
I'm going out and getting some vitamin D tonight.
D3, not D2. Yeah, vitamin D milk doesn't count. That's the wrong form of vitamin D.
Oh, good to know. All right, D3 is the way to go. Your next tip was maintain your hardware, and I think we talked about that, the calories being stupid and diets being a scam. One thing that caught my attention, I just wanted to see if this was just a clever way of putting it, or if there was something to this, where you said eat happy things that ate healthy stuff. Does it really matter what the emotional state of the creatures that you're eating was, or is that important?
You know, it's not as important as them eating healthy stuff. I'd rather eat a grass-fed angry cow than a grain-fed happy cow. But there is evidence that if animals are butchered in a particularly heinous way, as many factory-farmed animals are, that they get a huge spike of cortisol and other stress hormones that enters the meat because it's there when the animal's killed. And then you eat them, and you absorb those hormones too. So there's no need to eat, poorly killed animals. I also, in my talk, I flat out say vegetarianism is not very good for you, and veganism over time is almost certain to kill you or lessen the quality of your life. My argument around eating happy animals is I kill one cow a year to feed myself. That's it. I don't kill a single animal with a tractor cutting down grains for me to eat. None of that stuff. So I'll argue that there's less deaths per hour lived on my diet than any other diet on the planet.
Okay, well, fair enough. How about the next one, which was learn to use your body? And I think we've talked about learning to relax. Now, I want to get back to both yoga and meditation, because you've talked about both of these. And if I understood you correctly, you said you practice yoga, but you only go every a couple times a year or something like that. Is that correct?
I practiced yoga pretty intensely for about 5 years. In the talk, actually, I put my ankle behind my head. And I do that because yoga gave me many things, and I still enjoy yoga. And I would like to do yoga twice a week, except right now I've got too much on my plate.
You are the first guy who's not a yoga teacher I've ever seen do that, by the way.
And it's, in my mind, it's particularly cool because I have not done it for 18 months. I don't wake up every morning and stretch. I didn't pre-stretch. I literally said, I don't know if I can do this because I haven't done it in a while. The reason I could do that is that in the course of my study of yoga, I learned to control fine muscles in my pelvis, and along my spine, along each rib. And when you consciously wire control in on this, you get a better kinesthetic sense. And the mind-body connection actually balances the hemispheres of your brain. If you do yoga or you do a functional movement thing that teaches you the difference between left and right in a very subliminal brain way, you will be smarter. You'll be more creative and better at solving problems too. You can't separate the body and mind. And if you're only using part of your body, you're only using part of your mind.
Okay. What about breathing? You talk about the importance of developing a certain kind of breathing practice. How does that fit in with the other things we've been talking about, the heart biofeedback and some of these other practices? Is that something that should be done separately? It's something that people should be doing every day, and what are the benefits of that?
Well, most people breathe shallowly at the top of their lungs, and you need to be able to take deep abdominal breaths. I was very skeptical the first time someone said, come to one of these Art of Living classes. I said, I'll do it. And there were some flowing robes, and generally I was offended, to be perfectly honest. But I've worked with Indian entrepreneurs for at least half of my career, and I just kept sort of hearing people who said, this is amazing. So I went again a few years later, and I actually tried this program of 10 to 15 minutes in the morning, every morning, using a specific breath that they teach you in the class. I ignored all the flowing robe stuff, to be perfectly honest, even though I think there's a lot of nonprofit goodness that's happening in the Art of Living Foundation. If you do this, your immune system gets reset, your brain, literally, your functioning of your brain goes up, and your stress levels go down. After 40 days, everyone I know who does this type of breathing, will they just get calmer, and everything seems easier throughout the day. And whether it's your perception of the day or things actually are easier, that's very hard to know. But I can tell you it's so important that for several years, every Saturday morning at 7 a.m., I would meet with a group of highly successful Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, the guys who were investors in companies like Google and Facebook and people like that. And we'd all sit and do this breathing in a room together for a half hour, actually a longer set of breathing then, and then travel for a little while about business and then go out and have the rest of our days. Guys like us don't waste our time. Hmm. We're all getting such benefits that we set aside the time to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, the next one was train your heart. I think we talked about that. Now, upgrade your head, and you talk about smart drugs. Are there particular drugs? Obviously, there are going to be different things recommended for different people and different objectives that they have, but is there anything in particular that you recommend across the board for everyone?
There's one called piracetam, which is one of the most well-understood, very safe smart drugs. You can't get it from your doctor because even though it's a prescription drug in Europe that's been around for almost 40 years, it's just not known in the U.S. You can buy it on any one of a variety of websites, piracetam. This is something that increases oxygen in the brain, increases communication across both hemispheres, and most people I know who take it say, I don't feel a difference, but they keep taking it for a week just to see. And then when they quit it, a day later they say, oh, my God, now I see the difference. Mm. When people take it, they don't grasp for words nearly as much. They think a little faster, but it feels so natural that they think, oh, this drug had no effect. And then when it's gone, they realize, hey, I feel like I used to feel. I'm not the same. However, the one that most people that I know of really gravitate to is called Provigil or Modafinil. It's safer than a cup of coffee. It's a hypothalamic sensitizer, and it's what the military is giving their jet pilots who need to stay awake for 30 hours straight on bombing runs, things like that. The reason that the military is using it instead of methamphetamine, which is the previous drug of choice, is that it doesn't cause aggression, and it's not a stimulant. It doesn't raise your blood pressure. It doesn't make it impossible to go to sleep. It just lets you stay awake or be more focused if you want to. I've used it to count cards in Las Vegas with amazing results. It helps you with focus, and it's not a buzz or a high or even as abrupt as a jolt of good caffeine from awesome coffee. It's something that just makes you feel more there. Everyone I know who's tried it says, you know what, this is a good thing, and it's not an addictive thing. It's just a good thing.
But that, unlike the piracetam, that is a prescription drug?
That's a prescription drug, and some doctors have a hard time prescribing it, and some insurers have a hard time paying for it, unless they learn that the patient has a shift worker sleep disorder, which is very common. If you, for instance, take phone calls late at night or you travel on occasion and that requires you to shift time zones, it's very much approved and covered by insurance companies for that case.
Hmm. Okay. But otherwise it's more something that you're on your own, right?
Well, if you go with your doctor and you say, I want to take this so I can feel better all day at work, and I can get my work done and come home and have enough energy to play with my kids and have a romantic dinner with my wife and then go to sleep and sleep all night, wake up, do it again, they're probably going to say, shame on you, that's cheating. And my answer would be, well, hell yes, it's cheating. Help me cheat. That's your job. However, since most physicians won't respond that way, what people can do is make sure that they have done the research online, they understand what the drug is, what it does, and what it's approved for, and see if they have anything in their lives that would require a prescription for it. It also turns out it's a great treatment for ADD, which is a rampant problem in the business world today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds more hopeful than I was thinking of going to my doctor and saying I want to count cards in Vegas. I didn't know if I was going to.
It also is available
on that one.
You can also buy it direct over the internet, and it is legal to import up to 3 months of a prescription drug from overseas, as long as you have a prescription for it, and the prescription can come from a doctor overseas as well. I've ordered smart drugs from Europe for the last 15 years. I've had many cartons of them opened by customs, but none of them overseas because what I'm doing is legal.
That's key. Well, you mentioned an awesome cup of coffee. So caffeine, where does it fit in terms of smart drugs?
Caffeine's a double-edged sword, but it's definitely a smart drug. I write kind of extensively on coffee and the art of coffee, because the difference between a good cup of coffee and a bad cup of coffee is good coffee is neuroprotective, and it is shown to, for instance, stop brain cancer. But typical coffee, which is blended from very poor quality beans that have a mold called Fusarium growing on them, can introduce things that interfere with good brain function. What I've found through really careful experimentation and some research that isn't well known anywhere is that you need to choose coffee according to the quality of the coffee and according to how the beans were treated and whatnot. If you do that, it is a profound smart drug. If you instead go out to your local coffee chain with low-end coffee, even if it's served in cups with green logos on it, you won't feel as good and you won't perform as well. So I invest in high-end coffee, and I think it's important if you're going to drink a lot of coffee, especially, to not mess around with the cheap stuff.
Good to know. Well, I'm going to be, among other things, doing, getting my vitamin D3, upgrading my coffee based on that.
Upgrade your coffee, that's perfect. I just posted within the last week three blog posts about coffee, including the algorithm for picking the healthiest cup of coffee you can get. And don't just drink coffee for your health. Drink coffee for your performance and for your quality of life. And if you follow the selection process I'm suggesting, which is basically high altitude grown, single estate beans that are properly roasted, basically the expensive coffee if you buy it by pound, you'll feel noticeably better when you drink that coffee than if you drink whatever you bought from the grocery store down the road.
I'm going to check that out. I think that's worth exploring, because I'm a person who I've tried actually getting caffeine out of my life, and that just didn't work at all. So I'm committed to I'm resigned to the fact that I'm going to be a coffee drinker. So I think I want to make that the I want to incorporate that into my life the healthiest way that I possibly can. So I'm gonna check that out. Well, we've worked our way to the end of the list. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about biohacking or hacking our own lives that we haven't had a chance to get to?
One point that I don't make in the Bill presentation is that when you approach life from a biohacking perspective, you get compounded benefits very quickly. If you manage to be fully alert and awake with an hour's less sleep, that extra hour is yours to do with as you choose, and you can use that to continue making your immune system work better, or to learn a little bit more about what you want to eat so that your brain will work better. But that every time you make a small incremental improvement, it pays off for the rest of your life. So this is one of the most efficient things you can do in order to reach the goals you have, whether they're personal goals or business goals or anything else. You can turn the volume up on everything, and every time you turn it up a notch, it gets easier to turn up the next notch.
So it's a real cumulative kind of process. The more you improve, the more you can improve.
Absolutely.
Fantastic stuff. Well, folks, the book is called The Better Baby Book. The blog is called BulletproofExecutive.com. Our guest has been Dave Asprey. Dave, thank you so much for spending the time with talking to us. I read a lot of stuff. I talk to a lot of people, and I don't say this very often, but you have truly opened up an entire new world for me. I'm really looking forward to learning more about all of this. Thank you so much for being with us.
Phil, thank you for having me today.
And okay, that brings us back to Fast Forward Radio. And Stephen, are you with me?
I am. Fantastic interview. I wish I could have been a part of it, Phil. That was very well, very interesting. That reminded me of many of the ideas I've read about in Timothy Ferris's book, The 4-Hour Body.
Well, you can see a real philosophical kinship between Asprey and Ferris. And if you've read Ferris's earlier book, The 4-Hour Work Week, the whole idea of kind of cheating your way to that life doesn't have to be hard, that if there's an easier way to get the bulk of the benefit of something, maybe that's the better way to go, really kind of informs both of what they do. And it's a really interesting,
really interesting approach. Also, just the notion of so much of the conventional wisdom is wrong, which I think is a big part of what you get in the Timothy Ferris book. So you've read the 4-Hour Body.
Yes, excellent book. It's a pretty big book. If you were to just sit down and read it, I mean, there's like a, I'm not sure how many pages is in it, but I mean, it's huge. It's like a phone book. What you really want to do is pick what issues you want to deal with, and then, you know, dial in the chapters. Basically, it's an interesting approach. He encourages you basically to become your own biohacker. You know, I've heard the concept called also the quantified self. You know, lots of different ways you could get into it. Just that's what works for you, and then continue to tweak it. And you know, I think part of it is to keep good records so that you know what works and why. You know, and then you can continue to and improve upon it. So,
it's a great idea. When we had Christine Peterson on back last fall with the self-managed, self-directed life extension conference, was also very much in the same vein, talking about people basically experimenting on themselves, right, trying different things out, recording the results. This is really interesting methodology that's developing of people using themselves as their own lab and figuring out approaches to life that work best for them. We're seeing some interesting things come of that. The diet stuff just freaks me out. I mean, I've been a big believer in low carb diets for a long time, and after reading Gary Taub's book, I became persuaded that it's as much a factor of getting the fats right as it is getting the carbs out, or getting most of the carbs out. But even I wasn't prepared to hear a stick of butter a day and a pound of meat a day.
Grass-fed butter. That's awesome. You know, I enjoyed also the discussion. I would like to have asked him what his thoughts are on these things like, the toys that are coming out now, like the Jedi Force Trainer. These kids putting on, you know, what amounts to a very simple EEG type device on their heads, and then moving things, you know, as if they're like, you know, Jedis or something with their minds, you know, and you really have to train yourself. It's not just something you jump right into. You get better over time as you learn how to control your brain waves in order to get the desired result. And I think that's fascinating. World needs, Phil. You know, any engineers out here? Here's an idea that's going to make somebody a millionaire. So here's the deal: invent a baseball cap that's got like an EEG built in that can communicate via Bluetooth with an iPhone and an iPhone app to allow us to enter Zen states on the fly. You know, I mean,
there you go. That's the very kind of scaled down thing that Brain State Technologies is doing. I put the link up there in the chat room. That's scaled down from what David actually did, which was a week with this really intensive program with the EEG. You know, it's like that's $20,000. These guys are $2,500. Where's the $200 solution, right? Where's the $20 solution, right? It's gonna be somebody coming up with that, a baseball cap EEG with a Bluetooth connection to your iPhone, and you're getting, you know, maybe 80% of that same experience, getting that same that same feedback, and getting your brain into a state that otherwise you would just never even know. I mean, that typically belongs only to people who have dedicated their lives to these spiritual practices, who you know, through years and years of discipline and just focusing, are able to make those kinds of things happen. I think that's a great idea. Somebody needs to do that, Stephen. That's a good idea. We need the baseball cap EEG. So anyone listening who wants to actually implement that and cut Stephen and myself in for half the money, we're
all about that.
we're eager to give it our full endorsement, I think, at this point.
Exactly.
Well, I'd like to welcome all our listeners joining us in the chat room. Blog Talk Radio was kind enough to put our notice up about an hour into the show. So if you missed hearing the entire interview with David Asprey, it will be available via archive as soon as this show concludes in about 15 minutes. So I look forward to having all of you be able to hear the show in its entirety. Sorry that the notice didn't get up a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've had our share of time problems with Blog Talk Radio the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we schedule a show and then get ready to go on and see that it was bumped back and we canceled that show and reset it. It's been kind of a mess, but, hey, you know, we still prefer Blog Talk Radio to the other things out there, so... Anyway,
well, I see in the chat room, Mystic Chava says that is a problem that they've had with all the shows tonight, so it's not just us, and that apparently, I'm sorry, he or she, I'm sorry, I can't tell your gender from your name there, Mystic, has been hitting all the shows at the end because of that very problem, so we're not alone.
Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio, if you love you, please straighten out your time problems. We would ask that you get somebody who understands clocks to sort that out. That would
be me. I'm the world's worst at time zones and things like that. So get somebody who really knows.
Yeah, I mean, we've had our share of confusion on our own end, but there's definitely been times when it's them, it's not us, and this is another good example of one of those. Anyway, so other reflections. We were hoping to have a special guest dial in this evening, but I don't guess he's shown up, has he?
He is not. I've been on the switchboard, so we did not have him this week. Perhaps next week.
Yeah, it was a big chance. I don't know. If he dials in next week, we might take the call. We'll see. You know, if we're not too busy, we had an awful lot of time.
Hey, I did want to let you know, Phil. We have done something at my house that, you know, I live in the country, so this is possible for me. Wouldn't be everybody, but. We have
excuse me, one moment. Mystic Chava is a she. Okay, I just want to point that out.
Okay, we'll get that straight. Okay.
Okay.
We have put in part and you know, on the back portion of our property here for the very purpose that we wanted to avoid, you know, the sort of things that you get from, you know, corn-fed, hormone-induced chickens. You know, we wanted healthier eggs. We wanted healthier chickens. So
are you grain feeding them? It's like you need to feed them vegetarian diet, right? So that they have omega-3 fats. Is that part of it, or?
Yeah, that's right. Giving them better feed. We're also we got a chicken yard, so they're able to actually get out and you know, scratch around on the ground with the grass and everything, and that improves the profile. And of course, no hormones at all are injected into them. So that's part of our deal. Having four kids, this is huge. They're loving it. They're out there.
So are they the chickens, this is interesting now. Do they see the chickens as pets? Do they form relationships with them?
That's going to be interesting to see how it's time to eat a chicken. How do you guys feel about it? I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're enjoying
them as pets so far, anyhow, huh?
Yeah. So.
You know, one of the things I've wondered about, and I haven't really checked this out, but the emphasis on grass-fed beef and dairy products is that's very interesting to me. I haven't actually priced those at local markets, but I'm wondering, is that something living in a an area where there's rural stuff available to you? I mean, is that something you could get if you wanted to get like grass-fed beef? Could you go buy a side of that, or is that?
Yeah, it's available. But it's generally a lot more expensive. A feedlot beef is the reason they feedlots are not pleasant places to be. You know, if you've ever driven past one. You know, you can smell them from 5 miles off. It's a bad, but the reason they do it is because it's worlds cheaper to do it that way. But I mean, instead of having a good balance of omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids in the beef, it's thrown way off. You got primarily
way off,
omega-6.
Way too much six. Yeah.
Yeah, way too much six and not enough three, and so it's just not good beef. It's really not good for you, and so grass fed beef is much more in balance on that sort of thing. And so if you can get it, that's great. So and who knows, with corn prices going up, maybe grass fed beef there'll be a
point. It might make a comeback. Economic comeback for grass fed beef. That would be. That would be pretty interesting. Well, I also wonder if there is some biotech way of producing grass in such a way that it could be delivered more in the feedlot methodology. Although I'm not a big fan of feedlots, I have eaten my share of food from them. It does seem a lot more humane to allow cattle to graze and kind of have a life.
A normal life,
It's
kind of a sad thing, those feedlots. I mean, they're just out there. No need to describe it. It's not a pleasant.
No, we know what we're talking about here. And I thought it was very interesting that David referred not only to the need for it to be grass-fed, but that there are actually health benefits associated with how mainly even the animal dies, which is really interesting, and I'd never heard that before, that even that can be a factor, not only in terms of, you know, whatever karma or like just good feeling you might have about what you're eating, but there's actually a nutritional aspect to it. There's a health benefit to seeing to it that these animals are treated humanely right up until the end. That was a completely new thing. I'd never heard that before. I thought that was really interesting. It was also really
happy cows.
Happy animals that
healthy animals
that eat healthy things themselves. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
The endorsement of coffee, bringing endorsements of coffee keep coming in, but it does sound like to really get the benefit, you have to go a little highbrow with the coffee.
Yeah, and you know it really does in your own beans. So it's just for what it's worth, you know, that just makes it extra good. So
you do get a much more authentic. Coffee experience, just the aroma alone, right? And you can almost get a caffeine buzz off that just grinding those beans yourself. What about the part about smart drugs? Are you sold on those, Stephen? Are you ready to start popping pills to improve your mental state?
I really do believe in, is it modafinil?
Something along those lines. Yeah, exactly.
What I've read about that particular drug leads me to believe that it's not. It leads to improvement for just about anybody. Anybody who takes it, it's not just an improvement for people who suffer from ADD or who need alert at times when they're normally sleeping. It's an improvement for anybody at any time. And that's pretty remarkable, and also the fact that there's just like a lot of side effects are downside to it. It's something that people could take on a fairly regular, and so far they don't see a whole lot of downside to it. That's a pretty remarkable drug, and I've never taken it, but I tell you, if I was back in law, I would definitely have a prescription. No
yeah,
doubt.
Me too. Yeah, if I were in school, I would too. It sounds like the perfect thing for students, doesn't it? Particularly in that its benefits appear not to come in this very intrusive way. It's not addictive, and you're not getting a lot of those. Because I used to just max out on the caffeine, studying for finals and things like that, and you'd get those awful, that jittery like.
Yeah,
you've been up all night, and then you take the test, and you're sitting there, and it's like your hand is way too tight on the pen, right? As you're
writing. Yes, I know what
you're talking about. That's fun stuff. Well, so I think we're on the same page. I'm actually going to be checking some of this stuff out. I'm looking into getting the heart monitor. Because I'm really interested in seeing what the benefits there are, and I'll probably try that sleep thing too. I've actually been in long-term discussions with my doctor about whether I need to go participate in a sleep study or not. So I'm thinking I'm thinking I might give this a try just as a kind of a first step. So I'm stepping into this world of becoming a biohacker, and we'll
we'll see how it goes. I intend to report back on this in the weeks to come. Also, go ahead.
I was just going to say the toys that allow for biohacking are going to be getting cheaper and better. I'm looking forward to Timothy Ferris actually tried a device that's made for, the worst sorts of diabetics, the people that really have to be on top of their blood sugar all the time. He actually had a device, a port injected into his body so that he could monitor his on a minute-by-minute basis or on a real-time basis. He doesn't recommend that for anybody, and Timothy Ferris doesn't even have the problem that machine was a diabetic. But what he was able to learn from that device is incredible. He was able to find out what really works and then structure his diet accordingly. And so, when those tools are less, a whole lot less expensive, that's going to be important.
It's amazing what is just being opened up. My other blog and my other podcast are called The Transparency Revolution, and I think there's a real parallel between what we're talking about here and what we're talking about in the business and generally organizational and the government world, which is just getting the information into the hands of people who need it in order to make proper decisions. And, it's like we're making our own bodies transparent. We're making our own internal processes transparent to us so that we can make better decisions and improve our lives. It's really astounding the opportunities that we have to do that now.
Well, I see even with 90 minutes that we're right up against the time and we haven't run the music. So is million light years from Celestial Underground.
Celestial Underground singing million light years. Well, thank you, Stephen, for putting that together, as always. Thanks to all our friends in the chat room. Had a great chat going this evening. Thanks for everyone listening live and everyone listening via MP3. We'll be back on Saturday evening with the World Transformed 1.5, an archive show on Monday, and we'll be back on live 1 week from tonight. Hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.
A million light years away from my home. A million light years away. A million light years away from my home. A million light years away. Vaccination for the mind. Captured now, make me part of the crowd, easier to regulate. I must investigate. Yeah. The message comes straight from above. There's no future here without love. We're moving on to a new tomorrow without any doubt. So are you brave enough now to see? It's been all a conspiracy. Let's look ahead to a new.
hypnotized, just a fool's paradise, cause underneath we feel the pain, yeah, we feel the pain. Now the faithful have rolled over now.